After the seam burned, the bottom of the basin collapsed and slowly filled with water from the area. We drove past the Lake Stop store, where McGroder noticed a large sign adorned with Smetty, the long-necked dinosaur that circled the print and winked at passers-by. "What the heck is a Smetty?" "The local monster that supposedly lives in the lake." I glanced at him as I pulled my truck up to the rock shop. In the late 1800s, the lake had a surprisingly high salt content, and the Indians believed there was a lost tunnel connecting it to the Pacific Ocean. The legend gave rise to a number of stories of a creature similar to the Loch Ness monster, Smetty being the most popular. The FBI man turned to the scientist. "So what are the chances that Smetty is real?" Dave shook his head as I shut the bullet down. "None." McGroder looked at him a little quizzically. "How come?" Dave huffed. "All right, setting aside the fact that this thing, probably an Elasmosaurus, died off in the later Cretaceous period millions of years ago, even if one of these things survived, how the hell would it have lived in there for 66 million years?" McGroder took on the role of devil's advocate. "I don't know. What's the lifespan of one of those Elmosauruses, anyway?" Dave palmed his face. "About 30, if they're lucky, real lucky." I held Dog's collar as the two of them got out. "You stay in here, buddy, at least until we find out what's going on." Mike thought about it. "Maybe it's a family of them." Dave palmed his face again. "These marine reptiles were close to 60 feet long and weighed around 15 tons. He gestured toward the waves scalped by the Wyoming wind. "There aren't and never have been enough fish in that body of water to keep one of those damn things alive for a week, let alone families of them for millions of years." The FBI man looked at the water the way men have since they crawled out of it. "Well, you never know." Bauman looked at him incredulously. "Yeah, you do. That's the thing about science. You can figure things out with what we call facts. I swear that's the reason I don't specialize in marine reptiles. You'd be hard-pressed to find a single mouth-breathing moron that believes that somewhere on the planet there's probably a Tyrannosaurus walking around, but the vocal minority of so-called experts that believe that some species of sea serpents has survived to the modern day never ceases to amaze me." As Dave began winding his way through the maze-like area in front of the rock shop, McGroder watched him depart and then gazed at the massive lake, his imagination transporting him to a place where science refused to carry water. "You never know." I shook my head and followed Dino Dave. Beginning as an Airstream trailer, the Lake de Smet rock shop had been here for years and had grown exponentially from its humble beginnings to a fenced rabbit warren of tables made from concrete blocks and wide barn planks. There were rocks of all types everywhere, and say what you want about the product, nobody seemed to care that the things were sitting about in the weather. I guess if the rocks had survived for millions of years lying around on the ground, they could probably withstand a little sun and rain. There were signs all over the place proclaiming geodes $1 apiece, minerals and gems. Bauman was banging on the warped screen door, paint flakes dropping as he knocked. "Jen, it's Dave. Are you in there?" "Kind of hard on the FBI, weren't you?" "He's an idiot." He rapped smartly on the door again. "What about that fish that they caught off the coast of Africa back in the 30s? Everybody thought those things died off in the Cretaceous period, right? You know, you bring up some of the strangest stuff." He continued knocking. "It's not the same. This is not a fish." He turned back to the door. "You know, I almost wish they hadn't found that damn coelacanth. All it's done is embolden all these cryptozoologists, creationists, and snake oil salesmen who somehow believe that finding living dinosaurs will somehow invalidate the theory of evolution, which it won't." I studied him, wishing they'd not found a specimen. "That doesn't sound particularly scientific, Dave." "You know, Sheriff, I've always thought of you as being an intelligent man." I sighed. "Don't get me wrong, I agree with all the things you're saying. It's just that the scientific method, like the principles of detection, rely on that magnificent process called theory, a thought supported by empirical fact. But that's the wonderful thing about facts. They keep turning up, and, like theories, they evolve." He finally smiled. "Maybe I should have you come and do the talks at the museum." "No, thanks. I've got a pretty good day job." I reached past him and banged on the door with the force of having done it a great deal more than the curator. "Jennifer, it's Sheriff Walt Longmire. Can you come to the door?" There was no response. I knocked again and watched as McGroder walked up. "What's happening?" "So far, nothing." He stood there for a moment more and then turned and walked away, continuing on around the building. "Jen, it's the sheriff. Open up." Still nothing. I pushed past Dave and placed both hands on the knob of the dilapidated inside door. "What are you doing?"
"Opening it."
"Can you do that without a warrant?"
"If invited, yes." I called out.
"Hello, anybody home?"
A voice shouted from the other side of the building.
"Sure, come on in." I pressed my shoulder against the facing and popped the door, swinging the thing wide, as Dave stuck his head back in my line of sight.
"You can't do that. That was that FBI agent that said that."
"Did you see him say it?"
"Well, no."
I stepped into the crowded front room.
"Then it's a theory."
"Huh?" The Lake de Smet rock shop had perhaps seen better days. There was an old cash register from the 70s that looked inoperable, crouched on a vintage oak-framed display counter that held a number of old rocks, minerals, agates, and a few of what appeared to be gold-panning kits. Dave shrugged. "Jen kind of let the place go after her dad died, but she can't seem to get rid of any of the stuff." I stepped around the counter and picked up a phone by the cord. "I don't think it's connected. She uses her cell phone." I listened to it for a second and then hung it up on the wall cradle. "Well, it's certainly not connected now." I moved on to the non-commercial portion of the place and used an arm to part a beaded curtain. The windows had mustard-colored sheets draped over them, giving the room a dark but golden cast. The furniture was old, chenille-covered stuff from the 30s, with tattered Indian blankets thrown everywhere in a failing attempt to guard against the dog hair. There was an opening to the right that revealed a kitchen, so I stepped in that direction but still didn't see anything that looked out of the ordinary. There was a door leading to another storage area, and possibly the back, and another across the main room that probably led to the bedroom. The only newer items in the living room were a large flat-screen television and a desk with some electrical cords lying on the surface. I glanced around but couldn't really see anything out of place or signs of a struggle. "Did she mention anything about going anywhere, staying with somebody?" Dave stood in the doorway, holding the beaded curtain in his hands, evidently reluctant to enter.
"No."
"Did you check the museum?"
"I did earlier." He shook his head. "She's been disappearing a lot lately."
"Call again."
He pulled out his cell and hit speed dial. If she was there, she'd have her cell phone on her. Maybe she's charging it in her van, which, by the way, doesn't appear to be here. There was a Northern Cheyenne Fancy Dance fan under a plexiglass cover on a side table, and I removed the top to look at the thing. Ancient. The seed beads were encrusted with ash, and the feathers tattered, but it was still beautiful.
"Don't touch that!"
I turned to Dave.
"Sorry. It's sacred?"
"It's poisoned is what it is."
He eyed me as I carefully replaced the top. "That one was recovered from the Peabody Museum at Yale. The things are coated with dangerous amounts of arsenic, lead, mercury, and other heavy metals. Back in the 19th and 20th centuries, the museums used about 100 different pesticides to keep insects and rodents from eating the things." I studied the artifact. "Where did Jennifer get it?"
"Hell if I know."
He gestured with his phone.
"Nothing, just the answering machine."
I started toward the door to the left that hung partially closed and pushed the thing open slowly. There was an old four-poster bed that had been slept in and an ashtray sitting on the nightstand full of butts. There was a mess, but nothing to indicate foul play. A large dog bed was on the floor by a dresser, a few chew toys lying about. I glanced back through the doorway.
"She has a Tibetan Mastiff, right?"
He nodded.
"Not here either." "Hey, Sheriff!"
I glanced at the museum curator.
"Was that you or is that McGroder?"
"McGroder, and it's not a theory. I can see him."
I stepped out of the bedroom. Mike was standing by the back door, his sunglasses in his hand.
"You'd better come see this."
I gave Bauman a look as I passed, but he seemed content to stay where he was. The Groder stepped back through more tables piled with rocks, before stopping in what appeared to be a mudroom that was lined with old, paned windows that had been nailed together. The door was ajar. The agent tucked his regulation Ray-Bans in his jacket pocket. "Honest." Pointing to the steps outside, where it looked like someone had taken a hammer, or a rock for that matter, to a piece of electronics, he leaned against the back door jamb. "I think that's what's left of a desktop computer." I kneeled down and picked up the pieces. "Have you got people who can patch it back together and get the information out of it? Video files, specifically?" He shook his head, doubtful. "I'll have Jared look at it, but I wouldn't hold out much hope." My attention was drawn to a collection of brown drops on the chipped linoleum, about the amount that might be held in an eyedropper. McGroder's voice echoed my thoughts. "You thinking what I'm thinking?" He took a step toward me. "I mean, I haven't been in the field for a while, but that is what I think it is, right?" Chapter 10. I'm trying to figure out who would benefit from both Danny Lone Elk's death and Jennifer Watt's disappearance. Lucian sipped from the plastic cup that had been on his tray, but ignored the so-called food and glanced at his granddaughter, Lana Baroja, who stood with Henry, both of them leaning against the wall. "I'm trying to figure out who benefited from you lazy bastards not bringing me anything to put in this horseshit orange juice." He placed his book on his chest and looked at the cup. "God, that tastes nasty. What is that, tang? Damned astronauts should have left that on the moon." He held the cup out to me. "Here, taste this." Clever that way, I declined. "No thanks." I sat back in the visitor chair and listened to its squeal in protest. "I guess you didn't learn anything from this last experience, huh?" "What, do not drink poisoned liquor?" He gestured toward the bear, watching him with a bemused expression. "Indians have known that for centuries, right?" The old sheriff's eyes dropped to his tray, and he made a peace offering. "You want some? Hell, I don't know what it is, ladies wear, but you can have it if you want." The Cheyenne Nation shook his head. "No, thank you." Lana pushed off the wall and crossed to put a hand on Lucian's shoulder. "I'm getting out of here so that you fellows can talk shop." I got up with my hat in my hands, uncomfortable at having taken her seat, even at her insistence. I guess I was looking tired. "How's the Basque bakery business?" She smiled at my mention of her going concern. "Like everything else, picking up with the tourists." "Good. We got an impromptu jazz trio on Friday nights, and I hear you do a mean Ramsey Lewis impression of Wade in the Water." I stretched my fingers as if covering a few octaves. "I don't know, my fingers are getting a little stiff these days." "You should stop by." She moved to go, but then paused and looked at me. "Did you know I bought that house that's been for sale forever? The Victorian on the corner of West Hart over by the golf course?" Aware that she had received a healthy inheritance from her grandmother a few years ago, I knew her sole financial future was not tied to the bakery. "The Buell Mansion?" She looked embarrassed. "Well, I wouldn't exactly call it a mansion, especially with the work that has to be done." She playfully slapped my shoulder and pointed a warning finger at the bear, who pointed one back at her like they were a matched set of crossed sabers. "Take care of my grandfather. He's the only family I've got left." I watched her head out the door and turned to look at the old sheriff. "She's coming up in the world, huh?" He shrugged.
"Wants to remodel the carriage house behind the place and move me in there."
"Sounds like a good deal." He frowned.
"I like my freedom."
I studied the man who'd been born when automobiles had been a novelty.
I don't think she'll put a curfew on you."
"I guess if you can't get rid of the family skeleton, then you might as well give it a place to live."
I waited a moment and then asked, "How are you feeling?"
"Fit as a fiddle and ready for love."
He picked up The Middle Parts of Fortune by Frederick Manning and looked at me.
"Why'd you come in here?"
Isaac said he could run a quick analysis on the blood flakes we found at the Lake Desmet rock shop and get us a preliminary, so I thought we'd check and see if you were dead yet.
"Not yet."
The gimlet gleam returned to his eyes as he set the World War I memoir on the nightstand.
Make your deal?
What?
Get me out of here, and I'll help you with the case.
Just what I needed. I'll think about it. He set the plastic cup down on the tray with a flare of finality and crossed his arms.
Then the hell with a lot of you.
He glanced around as the Cheyenne Nation moved to the window and sat on the ledge.
Where's my damn leg?
Henry smiled.
I do not have the slightest of ideas.
The room was silent for a while, and then Lucian leaned toward me in a conspiratorial manner.
Come on, get me out of here. It's just that observation shit. Hell, you don't stay in here for more than 20 minutes, and I've been in here being observed for over 24 hours.
No. He didn't move, but his voice dropped a few octaves, and he attempted to sound innocent.
I'm going to start causing trouble.
I turned and looked at the bear, both of us knowing the width and breadth of the type of trouble of which Lucian Connolly was capable. Lucian, it's not up to me. What if I took you out of here and you had another attack on the sidewalk? He worked his jaw.
There'd be a great deal of celebration in some quarters.
Not from your granddaughter. The first lesson of sheriffing, when in doubt, defer. If Isaac says you can go, then you can go.
All right, then.
Satisfied with the track of the conversation, he leaned back onto his stack of pillows.
A lot of blood?
A few drops.
Any other traces?
Nope. He thought about it.
No drip, spray, or splash?
Nothing. He ruminated on the scene he hadn't seen.
That's queer.
I thought so, too.
Thinking somebody just cut themselves beating the living daylights out of that computer.
I nodded and let him continue to think.
So you got the highway patrol out in the girl's vehicle?
Yep. He shook his head.
Well, it ain't going to do you a hell of a lot of good either way. Them AAA with guns couldn't slap their ass with a patented ass-slapping machine.
He thought about it a while longer.
You want my learned opinion on this?
Sure.
Runner.
I crossed my scuffed boots and studied him. I thought about that.
Got served a subpoena by the FBI and figured she was going to have to testify against her friends over there at Jurassic Park.
The High Plains Dinosaur Museum.
Pile of bones in an old carpet store is what I call it. Whatever. She took that vehicle of hers and has it parked in the middle of nowhere. Hell, she's one of those archaeology types, so she's sitting out there somewhere with a pith helmet, a pina colitis, and toilet paper.
He glanced up at Henry.
In my experience, a woman won't go anywhere there isn't toilet paper.
I looked back at the bear, who shook his head at the malapropism. The old sheriff continued.
I bet if you check the grocery stores around here, they'll tell you that she loaded up and headed out for the territories.
What about the blood?
Hell, I don't know. Maybe that dog of hers killed a pack rat back there or something.
I shook my head. There would have been more of a mess.
Well, maybe somebody butchered a western cottontail.
The door opened and the chief of medicine entered the room and adjusted his glasses, but before he could say anything, Lucian spoke.
Isaac, I gotta get out of here.
He gestured toward me.
The current sheriff and full-time layabout and his redskin sidekick need my help.
The old doctor glanced at us. Is that true? Both Henry and I answered simultaneously and with a great deal of emphasis.
No.
He shook his head at Lucian and adjusted his glasses.
It's blood, all right.
How old?
Less than 24 hours.
I turned to look at Henry, who in turn looked at Isaac.
Human?
Within the ABO group with two distinct antigens and antibodies, B-type. With my limited facilities, it could also be another primate, but here in Wyoming, monkeys are rare, so the chances of that are slim. Lucian pushed his rolling tray away.
Well, thanks a lot, Doc. You just shot my theory in the ass.
He looked at me, snapped his fingers, and pointed one at me like a gun.
She's got a pet monkey?
No. He dropped the weapon and turned back to Isaac.
What the hell else can you tell us?
Isaac pulled his ever-present clipboard up and pretended to read from it. Female, blonde, approximately 26 to 28 years of age.
Damn, you're kidding.
He lowered the clipboard. Yes, I am. Lucian turned to me.
You know, the smart-ass quotient in this county has sure gone up since you took over.
I stood, and Lucian cleared his throat, which forced me to direct my attention to the dock as much as I was trying to avoid it. Isaac, he wants to know if you'll release him.
Please.
I stared at him, hoping I had misheard.
What?
Please get him out of here this afternoon. I've got two RNs in this wing who are threatening to put him out of their misery. He gestured toward the door. If he stays any longer, I really can't vouch for his safety.
So, what are you going to do?
Sharing the information that my son-in-law had been killed might not have been prudent, but it didn't seem right not to tell him, as Lucian was Katie's unofficial great-uncle and Ersatz's grandfather. Wait for word from Philadelphia to see if there's anything odd about what happened. He sat back in his seat as I made the turn on Fort and drove on toward the first grocery store on the way toward the mountains.
I don't have to tell you what I'd do if somebody shot my son-in-law.
No, you don't. You'd go to Philadelphia and shoot somebody whether it was the right person or not.
Makes you feel better when you shoot people. You ought to try it sometime.
I pulled up and waited at one of our three stoplights. I've shot people before, old man, and the last thing it ever made me feel was better. He turned and looked at the Cheyenne Nation.
What do you say?
Leave him out of this. He nodded as he turned back in the seat.
That's just what I thought.
When I first started out, you taught me to make sure I was right and then go ahead with all of my abilities. Well, this is the make sure I'm right part. I'm not going to kill a man because I'm angry about losing Michael.
The son of a bitch has already got an irrevocable contract out on you, and you don't think that's reason enough to go exterminate his ass?
If I go after him, it'll be for a specific reason and not a general feeling.
Well, till that time, you and yours are going to be marching around like tin bears in a shooting gallery.
He glanced back at the bear.
No offense.
Henry rumbled,
none taken.
I pulled my truck into the grocery store lot and saw the Save Jen banner on the side of the building. The old sheriff leaned forward, looking through the top of the windshield in the other direction and pointing toward the towering fork and spoon with the words, Settings for your table outside the IGA, where we sometimes Shanghai jurors for court duty.
I remember around the 4th of July back in 60, when Robert Taylor backed his Cadillac into that sign.
No, you don't. He turned to look at me, the indignation sharp in his eyes.
The hell I don't. It was a big old boat of a thing, white convertible with a red and white interior.
I pulled my truck up in front of the sign and parked. You might remember the car, but you don't remember the incident because you weren't there. He unclicked his safety belt, pulled the handle on the door, stepped out with his new four-pronged cane, and then opened the suicide door for Henry, who slipped out but left Dog inside.
And how the hell do you know that?
Having climbed out myself, I came around the front and joined them on the sidewalk. Because I was there, and it was later than that. I remember because he was filming a movie called Cattle King. He shook his head, looking up at the bulbs that ran the circumference of the kitschy sign.
Nope, you didn't start working for me till in the 70s, after Vietnam.
That's right, but before that, I witnessed Robert Taylor backing not only into this sign, but also into Ida Purdy's husband's 57 Apache pickup. We started toward the front of the grocery store, and I slowed to allow Lucian to keep up. He looked at me.
You know, I'm pretty sure that's the first time I became aware of you.
As we stood there, the automatic door slid open and he walked in like he owned the town, which he pretty much had for nigh on 60 years.
Where are the pickled pigs feet in this damn place?
A long-haired teenage beggar at the checkout raised a fist.
Save Jan!
I raised a fist in return and watched as Evelyn Clymer, an elderly woman who I remembered used to work at the hardware store but must have changed jobs, smiled at the old sheriff.
Hello, Lucian. We heard you had a stroke.
He limped toward them.
I did, but it must have been a backstroke because here I am.
The coy smile remained on her lips.
Well, I know that to be the truth.
The teenager looked native, and when he turned, I finally realized who he was, even though his hair was pulled back and he wore an apron. He spoke to the bear first.
Now, go ahead. What's up in it?
Just prowling, Taylor. And you?
The young lone elk leaned against the counter and gestured around him. Living the dream. He glanced at me.
Didn't know I had a job at the market?
I shrugged. No, I just figured you ran away for a living.
I mostly walk into town.
That's close to 12 miles.
He smiled. I run it most times.
Evelyn rested an elbow on the check-writing stand, propped up her pointed chin with a freckled hand, and glanced over Lucian's shoulder at us.
Something tells me this is a business call.
The old sheriff turned to me. What's your name?
Jennifer Watt. Blonde, about 5'7", mid-20s. Might have been in here in the last day or so.
Evelyn shook her head. Nope, doesn't ring a bell. But I don't know everybody, especially this time of year.
She reached behind her and picked up a phone.
Dan, the sheriff and his bodyguards are down here.
She hung up and we watched as a middle-aged man in glasses approached from the offices to our left.
They're looking for a young woman by the name of Watt.
The manager, Dan Crawford, pulled up and raised a fist.
Save Jan!
I returned the salute. This stuff was wearing me out.
First name Jennifer, works out at the High Plains Dinosaur Museum.
He continued, nodding.
She was in here when we opened this morning at 6. I thought it was kind of strange and that most people aren't usually in that big of a hurry to buy groceries.
He motioned toward the youth.
Taylor was here and spoke with her a long time, as I recall.
We all turned toward him, and he looked pretty unsettled.
Toilet paper. She bought a lot of toilet paper.
I avoided Lucian's eye. It's a large county. Dino Dave leaned forward and looked at the map unfolded on the hood of my truck, the fuzzy edges of where it was folded betraying its age and use. I'd imagine you want to concentrate on the areas where we've had digs. The places she'd be most acquainted with? The breeze was picking up, and the tail end of the storm that had hit us the day before was subsiding only to kick up its heels a little at the end. I glanced back at the vague shimmer of platinum light that was being swallowed by the mountains, and began wondering if it really was over.
Exactly what I was thinking.